I can tell you, I've been in several deadly force shootout situations, and, you know, the range of emotions span it, but
I think the first feeling is, God, I'm glad that's over.
You know,
and then the reality of the loss of the human life.
I had the situation where I had shot a murder suspect named Ray Perry Wilburn after a high-speed pursuit. It was a wild thing. I was working nights, and my wife at that time was also working nights at Hillcrest Hospital Surgery. She was a surgical nurse. I couldn't get a hold of her. That's where he went. So she comes home about 3 or 4 in the morning, just shortly after the time I got off, and she goes, oh my God, you would not believe. We got this guy that the police shot up. Somebody had shot him with a shotgun, and, you know, it was crazy. In fact, when we were undressing him to take him to surgery, he had a big belt buckle that said the right to keep and bear arms, and there was a bullet hole right through it. And I said, yeah, those were my bullets. After I explained it to her, it's like, oh my God, I'm so happy you're alive, you know, that kind of thing. But he was struck with multiple, you know, a 12-gauge buckshot throws out 9 pellets. I shot 3 or 4 times. He had a lot of holes in him and enough dope in him to keep him alive. I think it was the biggest medical bill the city ever had to pay. And I actually stood trial for a state civil rights violation.
You?
I stood trial, yes. And it was the only time it's the only time ever that the state utilized that civil case of a civil rights violation. It's how they filed the charge.
When was that, Mike? I was completely unaware of that.
The shooting was in 1981. It was sometime after that before it finally got to court.
It must have been after I retired,
yes,
in 83.
Okay. Yes, it was. Of course, it took the jury 28 minutes to figure out that there was no problem there, but the awesome responsibility of taking a life or trying to take a life or whatever, you know, you're just amped up with adrenaline going crazy and the things that are going through your mind, like your children and your loved ones and those kind of things. It's amazing how many thoughts travel through your mind at that time. And then over the years of 30 plus years in homicide, one of my most important responsibilities was investigating every incident of deadly force. We picked it apart down to the nano of a second. I mean, we tried to get in the officer's head, what he was thinking, what he saw, because we have to present the case to the district attorney, and we don't want to have any unanswered questions. I can remember a case where a young man was chasing an auto theft suspect about 2 in the morning in a neighborhood around Admiral and Harvard. They were running through backyards. And you know, that sounds fun, and it is fun if it all works out good. But he caught this guy, which was the good and the bad news. The guy was ready to kill him when he caught him. I mean, the bad guy was ready to kill the officer. The officer ultimately was fighting for his life, and the bad guy jerked away from him, pulled away. As the officer initially starts to shoot towards his chest, he pulls his gun in a split second, and he ended up shooting the guy in kind of the back, the side, the back. And the district attorney really, really considered filing charges on him because they look at it a very simplistic thing. Well, the guy got shot in the back. Well, there were some moments there that lasted maybe only a second or two that officer made that decision. So we ultimately were able to reenact it. We did it on video, and everybody's open. I want to say transparent. You know, we're just looking for the facts. We're not looking to put a spin on it that makes it look good for an officer. We're looking for the bare facts, and ultimately did. But those kind of things where somebody uses deadly force, it's not a cowboy old west kind of thing. I mean, the rules are so stringent. You know that you're going to be looked at multiple levels. Not only is your life on the line, your job's on the line, your kids' food is on the line. Nobody wants to use deadly force unless it's just absolutely required.
I want to piggyback on what Mike talked about. There's actually two parallel investigations being conducted simultaneously. One is the criminal investigation, and the other is an investigation, which really looks at the facts of the situation and actually doesn't become directly involved in the crime scene and all that, but it's looking to see if the departmental policies on the use of deadly force have been followed. So the officer who pulls the trigger has to be aware that he's going to be investigated for a criminal violation and also investigated for violation of the departmental policy on the use of deadly force. Really, the use of deadly force, at least in the Tulsa Police Department, comes down to almost that split-second decision. Is it going to be me or him who walks out of here? I've never been in that situation, but I have been frightened a couple of times. But it's serious business. Contrast that. My first sergeant on the police department told me about his first day on the job.
His name?
Vern Hedgepath. He retired probably in 1958, maybe, as late as 1960. Vern told me that he was hired on a day and told to go to a department store downtown and buy a shirt and a pair of trousers and to go to Dick Barden's store that was a combination Western wear and pawn shop and buy a gun. He came to work. They gave him a badge and took him up to 4th and Boston and said, direct traffic. He'd been there maybe 30 minutes and people came running out of the bank yelling, bank robbery, bank robbery. And the guy comes out and Vern pulls a gun, shoots and kills him. That was it. And it was the practice at that time when a police officer killed someone in the line of duty to charge them with murder and take them to trial to prevent some political thing in the future, bringing them to trial after all the witnesses were gone. And double jeopardy had been invoked and it couldn't happen. Vern said he stood up there and nobody told him anything about what was going on, and they read the charge document, the information, and he said, well, that sounds like it, the way it happened. I guess I'm guilty. And they had to recess court real quick and tell him, Vern, we're supposed to have to prove that you're guilty of murder, and in this case, we don't believe you are. But no training, no nothing, yeah. Just hang a badge and a gun on them, send them out on the street.
Okay, a couple of other that I just throw out here. Killing of Suzanne Oakley on the Riverside Jogging Trail.
Suzanne Oakley was murdered in 1976, I believe. Yeah. And she just followed the murder that we had about 6 months prior to that in 1975. It was Geraldine Martin murder from TJC that ultimately came as the basis of why we founded the International Association of Cold Case Investigators, because after 30 years, a cold case detective in El Cajon, California, put that connection together and actually found our murder victim. But Geraldine Martin was murdered along the jogging trail. Again, it was one of those cases that if you knew now what was going on then, that might have been a different story. It was very well investigated, but forensically, that was 40 years ago. Forensically, today, we might have some better information. That case remains open.
Suzanne Oakley.
Yeah, Suzanne Oakley. Somebody looks at it every year. There's something that comes in on it every year. And
so the shooter was not...
Well, she was strangled as she was jogging along the jogging trail. The consensus among investigators is that we had identified the suspect, but never was able to gather the information. He was confronted and didn't confess.
I remember the case was especially significant to us, not any more important than any other homicide, but she worked for the Tulsa Metropolitan Area Planning Commission, if I remember correctly, and was part of the family, really. It was thoroughly investigated, and it is painful to have to say to yourself, I know that guy did it. I just wish we had more evidence to prove it.